This is a Triple J podcast.
You're never the only queer person in your area. You're just often the only one you sort of know about.
Hello, Dee Salmon with you for the Hookup Podcast. And if you listened to the last episode we did, it was all about dating regionally. So if you are someone who lives maybe in a small town, maybe you live in a bit of a deserted place where the next town isn't for hours away. And we heard from so many of you talking about how that's kind of been a bit of a struggle for you, right? Like you felt like, you know, you had to go into cities to find love. Like you felt like you maybe were settling into relationships, or you felt the pressure to kind of go down that more of a traditional path. And we also heard from quite a few of you who are queer that this was even exacerbated, right? Like it was even harder for you, especially if you felt like there was no one else queer in the place that you lived. So I thought it was a really important topic to chat about for a whole episode and chat to some of those issues if you are someone who's discovering your sexuality for the first time and you live in a regional or rural area and you want some advice around that, or, you know, maybe you are someone who doesn't know how to come out and tell your community about your sexuality. So we're going to unpack that today here with Dr. Chris Tears, who is a psychologist and author of the new rule book. Chris, thanks so much for coming on the Hookup.
No worries.
So yeah, Peep and I did this app and we put up a poll on our Instagram at Triple J The Hookup, and we said, if you live rurally, are you struggling to date? And 49% of people said yes. And then we said, did you have to leave town for love? And 49% of people said yes. And we did get a lot of messages from people who are gay or queer, and they said living rurally makes it really difficult for them. Angus here saying, as a gay man, I find it really, really, really hard. And Jimmy as well saying, I had to move to the city to even come out with my sexuality. I lived all of my 20s as a straight male when I actually wasn't. So yeah, really keen to get your advice today. I'd love to hear from you, from, you know, someone who works predominantly with queer folk. What have you heard about some of the pressures and experiences that people go through when they do live in small towns or regional areas?
Look, we know from the research it is harder to not only date, but also just for your mental health and well-being for a lot of queer folk who live in rural regional areas. Like, we see high rates of depression and suicidality and anxiety. And a lot of that seems to be connected to the fact that you're in this town where everyone sort of knows you, you know everyone. So everyone's kind of aware what you're doing. And growing up queer, it's normally a space where if you're younger, you're kind of exploring like what your sexuality is. And it's really hard to explore when you feel like you've got eyes on you and they know, you know, if you do this, it's going to be talked about. So making it hard to explore, and also not having role models maybe around, or people that are known in the town to be queer, and having without these role models and also feeling like everyone's watching you, it's really hard to kind of develop your identity and to explore it. Added to that, what we call minority stress, which is kind of that when you're living in a town, I found this, you know, I grew up in regional New South Wales. When I was at high school, I kind of had this chronic, always kind of medium anxiety that people wouldn't know that I was gay if I spoke a certain way or did a certain thing. So you're kind of always hypervigilant to make sure no one finds out, which also adds to that anxiety and stress over time.
Yeah, I'd love to hear a bit more about your experience. What was that like for you? And did you have anyone that you could look to or turn to kind of figure out your sexuality?
Look, at the time it was TV, you know, because there wasn't people in my high school. Like, I'm sure, you know, stats are, there were definitely, you know, LGBTIQA+ people at my high school, but they weren't open. They weren't there. They didn't feel safe to do that. So I certainly didn't see it. So it was really just TV. You know, the internet wasn't really a big thing back when I was in high school. So I remember like Jack and on Dawson's Creek, and, you know, these very small characters were kind of my way in of going, oh, there is that thing, that gay thing. And it is really true. You can't be what you can't see, right? So it was once I saw that on TV, I started going, this is a thing. But overwhelmingly, the message I got from the town, which again, in rural regional areas, sometimes religious and conservative views can be really powerful. So really what I was receiving from most of media, most of like hometown, was that idea that being gay was wrong or sinful or something that would lead to HIV or risk. So growing up in that environment, I really didn't feel safe to come out. So, you know, I didn't. And I was one of those people that it wasn't until I moved to the city and started associating being part of queer communities that I felt safe to do that.
Yeah, I really want to chat about that in a second, about, you know, the fact that so many people do have to move to find their community, because that might not be possible for a lot of people. They might, for some reason, have to stay where they live. What's your advice for someone who is deciding whether or not to come out, especially if, like you said, you don't feel safe or it's a pretty conservative place that you live in?
I always love, rather than saying sort of coming out, to kind of that idea of inviting people in, like that this is, you know, your sexuality or your gender is a very personal thing to you. And it, who choosing who you share it to, it's a privilege for those people that they get to know this personal information about you. So thinking about coming out not as an event, but more as something, who are the safe people in my life that I want to come out to, and really seeing it as, you know, who are the people that I want to invite into knowing this part of me, and knowing that sometimes if you don't have those safe people in your life, coming out to your first to yourself first is, you know, the first step. So like journaling, watching TV, you know, reading books that are queer, that really exploring on your own can be the first step to then starting to think about who might be the safe people that I can invite in and let them know about my gender or sexuality.
You mentioned that, you know, it can really, there's like higher rates of depression and even suicidal thoughts. How can not feeling like you can show up as your authentic self really impact your mental health and well-being?
This is a really challenging bit, right? Because not coming out or not sharing yourself can be make you safer, because it means you're less likely to get that stigma and discrimination from the outside. But not communicating who you are internally can be really long-term, have negative consequences for feeling like whole yourself and feeling secure in yourself. So the one path through it can be almost thinking about like micro doses of authenticity. So thinking about, whilst you might not be able to feel safe to be able to be out all the time in your hometown, and there's very valid reasons why you might not be able to, thinking about where you might have these little micro doses of authenticity. So it might be in online environments. It might be at a certain, you know, shopping center, or a certain, you know, I remember like the MAC cosmetic counter or makeup stores or like certain shops, which is your little bit where there was just that person behind the counter that you got a vibe from, that you just felt, this is where I can have a little bit of that authenticity. And finding those spaces where you can just have a little bit, it can go a long way until later on in your life you might be able to really be fully authentic all the time.
What about with dating, Chris? You know, a lot of people's first experiences really shape their sexuality, right? And discovering who they are and who they want to date, and, you know, kind of fumbling around and figuring it out. What's your advice on how queer folk can navigate dating when it feels like everyone knows each other and you don't really know if anyone else is queer, so that you don't even know if there's anyone else you can really date?
Yeah, in small communities like rural regional communities, I mean, the first bit is the risk of being out, because obviously as soon as you go out there and are looking to date or ask someone out, you're really kind of outing yourself, right? You know, because you're kind of communicating that to someone else. So this is where like some online apps have become really helpful for people in rural regional areas, because you can filter them, you know, so things like Field or Grindr, you can filter. So, you know, it's a bit safer because you're filtering it by other people who are, you know, queer. And so there's a bit of safety that you're communicating that. And that might be a way to find other people. Also thinking about kind of those communities that might be not queer, you know, absolutely queer, but a bit of queer adjacent. So things like, you know, roller derby communities, some sports communities might have more like lesbian or queer kind of women in those, or some gaming communities, some like thinking about these other communities that may have an online base, but also some real life meets might be a way in. So they might not be queer on paper, but when you go there, there is that sensibility that the people are exploring as well. So finding these spaces that just start to feel more comfortable might be where you meet people that you then, you know, go towards dating or go towards making those connections.
How can you develop your confidence in those spaces? Because I know, you know, if you might have never even had sex before, or you might not even have kissed someone, or you feel a lot of shame around that. So how do you, I love what you said about microdosing, but how do you kind of put yourself out there and build that confidence to find these people in these communities?
I think the first thing is knowing that it will require being uncomfortable. Like sometimes we wait until we're totally comfortable before we do things. It will be uncomfortable to do new things, to go into these uncertain spaces. spaces. But what I would also say, though, is sort of trust your gut. Like if you do go to the space, so if you, you know, have been able to say, you know what, I'm willing to feel anxious to go to this space because I want to meet people. If you're then kind of in the space and your gut is saying, this isn't right for me, you know, go. Give yourself permission to leave. And that kind of can be really good, that maybe you kind of do yourself to be up to be like, yes, I'm going to go to this space, but tell yourself, but if it's not comfortable, I'm allowed to leave, and experimenting with that. Like, I'm going to go there, but I'm giving myself permission to go if it's not comfortable for me, and doing that as much as possible, to slowly experiment, to talk to somebody. As I said, starting in online environments can be good to build that community, and then they meet up in real life can be a little bit easier. I know some, you know, queer folk that go on online VR kind of environments as a meetup. You know, these things are good practices. You know, meeting in VR might be a little bit easier for you socially than in real life. So practicing it as much as you can online or in other environments, but then at some point, you know, making space for that anxiety to still go to that meetup, but don't feel like you have to stay for longer than you need to.
Yeah, I love the point of safety, because I remember when I lived regionally, I lived in Bunbury, which is like a regional area outside of Perth, 2 hours south. And one of my gay friends, he felt like there wasn't a lot of queer guys to meet up with, but he would be on the apps. And one of the things that he always spoke about was how many married men who hadn't come out maybe and like embraced their sexuality and were married to women were the guys that he would hook up with. But it was always done in secrecy, right? Like, it would be like on his lunch break in their home office, or it would be like in their garage, or like it was always done in these moments that like could be, I guess you're really putting yourself out there to rock up to someone's house. And in a way, I guess we all kind of do with apps. But yeah, what's your advice around like the safetyness of some people's secrecy around their sexuality?
Yeah, because we're all exploring queerness in different ways, right? For those married men, it's like on the apps, inviting people over. For you're a younger person, maybe it's going over to those places. You know, these are all ways that people explore sexuality and work it out. But that power dynamic can really be there if you're going over to an older person, man's space. Especially if you're younger, especially when it comes to, you know, going to, you know, older men's places, that sense of safety is totally a valid sort of concern. Again, I would say sort of trust your gut. If it feels not right, if the vibe's not right, don't go over. That's, you know, and always trust that. But also, you know, having someone safe in your life who you tell where you're going and when you come home, you know, just having that friend, or even if they're online, even if just saying, you know, I'm going here, giving them the address, saying this is where I'm going, and I'll let you know when I leave. And it, not only does that, you know, keep you safe because people know where you're at, but having that person, you know, you're going to talk to after it has that sense of, you know, no matter what happens here, I'm going to chat to my mate about it afterwards. I'm going to be able to like process and move through it, because the real difficulty of, I guess, exploring is if you're doing it totally on your own, you know, that you don't have someone to talk to, because identity, whether it's sexual identity, gender identity, we develop it relationally. We develop it with other people, talking to other people. So really focusing on, you know, if you've got that friend, you know, as much as possible, communicate to them who you are, what you're exploring with. And 9 times out of 10, if you're feeling like, I can't share this because what will they think of me? Most young people in rural regional areas are going through some version of feeling like I don't fit in, or who am I? But we just don't really talk about it. So you opening up the conversation, most of the time what will happen in return is other people feel vulnerable to do the same.
I love that so much, because sometimes all you do need is just one good friend, right? Like just one person who you feel safe to be yourself around. We spoke about having to go to a city. This was your experience. What do you recommend with that? Like, I had a friend who would travel 7 hours just for weekends, just to be able to go and meet people. If people have access to being able to travel, do you reckon that's a good way as well to meet like-minded people in your community?
Yeah, a lot of, you want to validate, like, there's no place in the world that's perfect, right? Whether you're living in a hometown or in the city, like a hometown might have issues of, you know, you feel no one else is queer there, everyone knows you. The city's going to have issues of being big and, you know, scary and expensive, and, you know, no place is perfect. So what I would say, though, is always checking with yourself before you make a decision or like to move to the city, kind of check in with whether you're kind of running away from something or running towards something. So, because if you're just running away from the hometown, that's never going to really end up being great, because it means you haven't really thought about what am I going towards? And is that where I want to be right now? Which is quite different than going like, you know what? The city is important to me. I want to go to the city. So rather than I want to leave this hometown, really being clear about why you want to move to the city, setting up supports there, setting up what, and really thinking about what life there could look like. And also, as you said, kind of validate that you can do both, right? So you can stay in the hometown and get the good parts of that, but also doing those little, I guess, micro doses of authenticity, go into the city on the weekends, you know, being able to live that part of yourself there is, again, a great way to kind of develop identity, that maybe the city is your safe place, or a certain club or whatever it is your safe place. And just doing that occasionally can be enough for you to really work out who you are.
Is there a bit of grief that you feel? Like, how did you feel about your hometown? Like, did you feel like you loved it, but then there's this conflicting feelings of being like, but I feel held back by this place, but then I want to live here, but then I feel like I can't. Like, yeah, how did you navigate that complex, nuanced feeling?
I still feel that grief, right? That I think grief's a really useful word for it. And in psychology, we have this term ambiguous grief, which is when you have a loss, but you haven't really lost it entirely, or it's a bit more complex. So like my hometown, you know, my family is still there. There's a life still there that I miss. I miss getting to be with them and sharing, you know, as my nieces grow up and being with my parents, you know, that I miss that. There's a grief of that, but I haven't lost it entirely. It's still there. So it's this like ambiguous loss. It's a loss, but it's not a total loss. So I would say is really validate and try and connect to what you have, where you're living though as well. So I immediately think about everything that the city has given me and hold on to that and make sure that I'm living a life here that makes it worthwhile that I have left back home. And again, making sure though I visit and really prioritizing that. It's very easy to, you know, get lost in the city or develop almost a new identity in the city and then not share it with back home. It is good to check in that sometimes your family, you know, if you've been away or you've been away from your hometown for 20 years, sometimes we've lost track that sometimes our hometowns do change and our family do become more accepting, but we've developed a habit of not really sharing ourselves. So sometimes it is about going home and sharing a bit of yourself and just test the waters now, because it might be likely that things have changed.
And you have no idea as well, like what that could potentially, the flow on effect of, you know, sometimes I've learned so much from the hookup and I'm so privileged and blessed for that. I think, you know, even just conversations I have with you, and then it's like I go home, not that Perth is a regional area, but sometimes it feels like that. But it's like I go home and I share so much of what I've learned from this job, and that then I can see the flow and effect of like even my parents learning from this work, and then or some of the changes in me, and then you kind of, you know, it's like it might be really subtle, but these moments of you bringing yourself back to your hometown can change even like small things in the way that the community accepts or sees people. A lot of people can't leave though. Like I think they might work on a family farm, or they might, you know, for financial reasons can't leave, or maybe they just don't want to. They love the place that they live. And that can be really hard because you might be the only queer person where you live. How can you build community online and find your people? Like, is there certain spaces that you recommend people looking?
I would say that you're never the only queer person in your area. You're just often the only one you sort of know about, yeah, or the only one that's out and open. You know, the stats would show that. So sometimes you don't know about the community that's there, and it's really hard. But beyond, you know, as I said, starting with those online environments and making connections there, sometimes it's you can be the one that starts the community event, right? You can be the one that starts the book club, and I know that sounds, you know, daunting. It will be daunting for so many. If you're younger, maybe this isn't you. But if you're not, if you've been in a town for a while and you have power in different ways, like maybe you own a business or you own a farm or the town respects you for some way, you can use that respect to start something, to share this part of you. And what happens is when someone creates a space, people can come and join it. And in the rural regional areas that I've worked in, that I've lived in, that I still see clients in, it's always incredible to me what comes out of the woodwork when you do create the space. Even if it's a parent who has, you know, a queer kid who now lives in the city, but they've become full PFLAG and they come to the event because they want to show that they love their son, or we never really know people's beliefs by looking at them. So kind of don't judge a book by a cover. sometimes I go back home and I think everyone still is like conservative and whatever. But then you start chatting to people and, you know, they've watched Heated Rivalry and they want to chat to you about it.
Stop that. It's true. I think we forget that people have so much access to so many different perspectives online now. It's like you just watch TikToks and you completely learn some stuff that you might never know. You watch Heated Rivalry.
And it's changing. And, you know, and you can be part of that change in these towns by creating the space. And absolutely what might happen is you create the space and only one person comes. But that's one person. And then that's somebody. And maybe that flows on to be a bit more. And every strong queer kind of community, you know, event or club in a rural regional town was started by one person, right? And as much as possible, if you've been there for long enough to use that power, what we see in the research is those people who stay in rural regional areas become the role models. And that has great outcomes for mental health and well-being, great outcomes for a good life. And if we all leave rural, if all queer people leave rural regional areas, we never change them. So owning that and really seeing that as really a really important thing you can do for the people in your hometown can be part of what you do too.
And you'd be so surprised, I think, like in regional Australia, like how much there actually is queer community. At least for me, I was. I have been to New York Pride. I've been to Sydney. I've been to Melbourne. I've done a lot of queer events. And I actually found like the funnest queer event I've ever been to was in Kununurra, which is like a small regional town at the top of WA, where that day I went to like their version of the Cup, I think it was. And we played two up and it was a whole thing. And it was like real cowboy energy. And then within an hour we were at Pride and it was like the most colorful, like full event, and it was so much fun and people were just so themselves, and it was like the best community vibe I think I've ever felt. And I was so shocked by that, like, and it was so diverse, and there were so many people that you might not have expected to be there, like real truckers, like men that with their, like, you know, their hats on. And it was just such a beautiful eye-opening experience, because I think I really did judge the place that I was in. I was like, oh, you know, I didn't expect that kind of queer community.
I grew up near Coffs Harbour, and I remember, maybe it must have been a decade ago now, they started a little festival called Coast Out that was like a queer festival, but it had Australia's first like LGBTIQA+ surf life saving kind of competition on the, you know, at the beach. And I remember I was just happened to be visiting home, and I went to like the night at the Hoi Moe, which was like the pub that I could never go into high school. Like, it would be the scary one. And suddenly it was this, like, you know, they had disco music and, you know, queer people all around. And I was like, what is this town? I grew up here. This is not, I don't think that festival happens anymore. But it's, again, that space was created, and then people came out from surrounding areas. And like, it's absolutely true that a lot of these spaces aren't safe for so many people. Mm. And you have to validate that. And that's why you have to do it in a way that works for you, and get safe people around you in a way that works for you. And not to mention, you know, maybe a town is rural region area is really supportive of like gay things, but you know, it's a whole different story when it comes to trans and gender diverse people in that town and where their safe spaces are. And we have to think about the whole rainbow when we have these conversations. But it is also true that these towns are changing, and minds are changing, and the more you let that authenticity out, the more you can change minds too. And really, the only way that people's minds change often in these areas is when they have a personal connection to somebody, and then that person turns out to be an identity or a sexuality that is new for someone, and then they learn, and then they change, and you know, that's how change can really happen. And it's a risk, absolutely, but sometimes it's a risk that's worthwhile.
I love it, Chris. Thank you so much. And what about resources that people can reach out to? Because like you said, it can be a bit of a journey and you might not feel safe. So where would you guide people to kind of start that journey, if there's like, you know, hotlines they can call or some online resources they can reach out to?
Yeah, it's certainly starting with like a Switchboard, which is a nationwide, you know, a call service, and Rainbow Door, which, you know, can connect you to services. But also thinking about Headspace for young people. There's Headspaces all around the country in rural regional areas. Often Headspaces are a good place where a lot of queer kind of community are there, and the support's there. So, but just you know, using the internet for what it's for, like research. You know, if you're in a town, type the name of your town and LGBTIQ groups and just see what's around in your particular town. And you may be really surprised what's around when you really look into it.
Or nearby towns, right? Like sometimes I get really shocked by it in the space of an hour or the space of just like a couple hours, how different nearby towns are. Like you might feel really isolated in your town, but then you drive for an hour and then you're so surprised by like how colorful the next one is, you know?
And ask your friends to come, right? Like, you know, allies, this is where, and if you're listening to this and you're not queer and you live in a rural regional area, if you're not queer, you know, you're not trans or gender diverse, but you see yourself as an ally, think about how you put that into action. How are you communicating to people around you with your rainbows or whatever it is? Because you can contribute to people feeling safer in your hometown as well. And then you can offer, you know, let's go, there's this thing two towns over, I'll come with you. It's sort of like that being that person and that ally is incredibly important for this as well.
Yeah, you could be the one that starts that community. Absolutely. Even if you don't identify as LGBTQI+. Chris, this was so good. Thank you so much. And we'll put all of the resources in the show notes as well and the details of where you can find Dr. Chris Cheers on Instagram and obviously read his book, The New Rule Book.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.